Hi, this is Paul Puckett. Welcome to Getting There. On today's show, we're going to have a little fun with America's favorite pastime and a fellow up in Virginia Beach, multi-talented, dedicated father, and author of The Adventures of Melvin Walker, a book on America's favorite pastime. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back, cause it's root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame, cause it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game. Well, you knew eventually I was going to sing on the show, and it's baseball. Spring training in Florida is done, and it's real baseball now. Now, I'm not a huge baseball fan, and what I know about baseball is probably less than I know about a lot of other things. But it's something we can all relate to. We've all seen it. Most of us have been to a game. It's a great sport, just one of many sports that I'm not exactly, shall we say, talented at personally. All of us played a little bit when we were young. Let's just say I was rarely the first one picked. A little bit at catcher, a little bit in left field. Occasionally hit the ball. My only home run came on 3 errors. But, you know, when we're little, we all dream of being something. Fireman, policeman, common, doctor, athlete. So few make it. You know, the other thing that so few do is read. And today we're going to be talking to Myron Campbell, author of The Adventures of Melvin Walker, which is the beginning of a book series designed to get kids back into reading. Looking forward to having him on the show. We're also going to be talking a bit about a Market Watch column that I think you'll find interesting. And let's start the show with a Todd Snyder song that is about baseball. I've wanted to have the Todd Snyder play on the show anyway. Great singer-songwriter. Hope you enjoy this song.
Favorite pastime. Doc Ellis didn't think he was pitching that day back in 1970 when he and his wife took a trip to the ballpark a little bit differently. So by the time that he hit the bullpen, half the world had melted away. Now that's about the time Coach Murtaugh came and said, Doc, you'll pitch today. Taking the mound, the ground turned into the icing on birthday cake. That leadoff man came up and turned into a dancing rattlesnake. That crowd tracked back and forth in waves of color underneath the sun. That ball turned into a silver bullet, his arm into a gun. I took a look all around the world one time. I finally discovered can't judge a book. 3 up, 3 down for 3 straight innings in a 0-0 tie. As all them batters' names come ringing from a voice out of the sky. Hallucinating Halloween saints, each new swing of the bat. His sinker looked like it was falling off a table, but nobody was hallucinating that. Took a look all around the world one time. I finally discovered you can't judge a book. By the top of the 7th, he was up 1-0, giving them Padres fits. By the bottom of the 8th, he was up 2-0, and they still hadn't got any hits. With 1 hour left to go in the game, batter looked like a baby child. That birthday cake was shaking down waves of color, was going wild. That he mowed the last man down, he was high as he'd ever been, laughing to the sound of the world going round, completely unaware of the wind. And while the papers would say he was scattered that day, he was pretty as a pitcher could be. The day Doc Ellis of the Pittsburgh Pirates threw a no-hitter on LSD. I took a look all around the world one time. I finally discovered can't judge a book.
And that was Todd Snyder, singer-songwriter, with his song America's Favorite Pastime. You know, I thought we'd talk a little bit, or at least start the show, with baseball, because the first book in the adventures of Melvin Walker, which we'll be hearing about from the author Myron Campbell here shortly, is Melvin Goes to the Ballgame. And the book series itself is not all about baseball, though. But how many of us remember, fondly for the most part, playing a little baseball when we were kids? And then we became older, you know, we had our team, we pulled for that team. If you live in Florida, you can go to spring training for just about, you know, half the league and watch them play live. So few, though, actually make it to professional sports. Those who do are talented, they've worked extremely hard. But, you know, from a financial standpoint, I have to throw something in. We assume that since time immemorial, athletes have made a boatload of money for playing, and that's not actually true. It's only in recent years, past decade or two, that the pay of these athletes really took off. And sometimes, when I'm out on social media or reading the news, somebody's mad about what a basketball player makes, about what a baseball player makes. And it's always struck me as a contradiction. Here's why. Where was the money going before the athletes got it? Well, it was going to the chief executive officer, management, and the CEO. So this is one where labor is the athlete. They're the stars, but they're also, they're the workers. They're the guys that are getting it done on the field, on the court, in the pool, whatever it is they're doing professionally. The reason it strikes me as interesting is that money is coming not from ticket sales. Well, some does. It's primarily coming from sponsorships and advertising. And it's a flood of revenue. And I think the players deserve it. Just Puckett's position for what it's worth. But at the same time, when you grow up and your parents aren't professional athletes or CEOs, and you grow up, you may not know how to handle all that money. We're going to take a brief break, and I want to bring you up to date on an NFL star whose mom got involved and just shared great information about the experiences her son is having and what money management is all about. Hi, this is Paul Puckett. As you may know, I love coffee. My friends would tell you I don't love coffee. It's an obsession, and not just any coffee. Espresso. If you're in the Bradenton area, one of the jewels of Bradenton is Old Main Street, and you'll find a coffee shop, B-Town Coffee, with a great alley and awnings and fans to keep you cool in the summer and in the shade, free Wi-Fi, and quite frankly, the best hot dog in town. Stop by. You'll enjoy B-Town Coffee. Welcome back. Well, you know, as I said, a lot of professional athletes who are now highly compensated compared really to any time in history, you know, they get there, but they didn't come from money. And the NFL actually has a program, like a lot of different professional sports leagues, where they have an annual personal finance camp where players and their families are invited to learn more about how to handle the income that they are receiving. Obviously, you don't become a professional athlete and play until you're 65 and get the golden watch. You've got a much more limited time frame. Now, in exchange, you're making a very, very high income, but it's important to know how to handle that from a tax standpoint, from an investment standpoint, so that when you leave professional sports, you don't have to immediately run out and get a job. We've all heard stories where that's happened. Well, Ontrell Roll, who I believe played for the University of Miami, because I remember Samari Roll played for Florida State, a team I'm very familiar with. He's a safety who's played with the Arizona Cardinals, New York Giants, Chicago Bears, and just a really awesome athlete. But, you know, like all of them, he all of a sudden he's getting all this money. What to do with it? Well, he couldn't make the personal finance camp, but his mom, Armelia Roll, could. He's now 33 years old, and he's been playing football since six, obviously professionally, for about 12 years. The first answer in her interview was, you know, when you found out your son couldn't come, did you think of not coming yourself? And the first, I want to talk about this first answer. It's a brilliant interview. I'll put a link to it on the website. What she said was, when he first asked if I would come, I said, of course. The basic issue is you have people with first-generation wealth. You don't have the knowledge, and that's what's so frightening and leaves you so vulnerable to being taken advantage of. You know, who knows what to do with a multi-million-dollar salary? We have enough trouble keeping track of what we have in whatever jobs we're working, but it gets much more complicated for those in the higher income levels. The taxation issue alone is huge, and how they structure their investments equally big over the long term. Eventually, you need the money to work for you. For professional athletes, the time frame between the beginning of working and retiring from their sport is pretty short. And of course, financial advisors, Wall Street, everyone knows this is a great target market. They have this flood of income coming in. Let's help them. But not everybody's there to help. And having family involved, which is why I was bringing this up, he couldn't go. He asked his mom to go. Talk about a relationship when you let your mom go, hear about what you should do with your money. You know, it was also interesting. I've always said, I said in my book, Investophobia, the last place you should be getting advice on where to put your money. Okay, maybe not the last place, but one of the places you shouldn't go is to friends. You can talk to your friends about, you know, what they think about someone that is in the business, you know, about general concepts or whatever. But if you start taking stock tips or money management tips, you just don't know how they actually are doing with those and what the risk may be. You need to either educate yourself or get with a professional to find out. She was asked, do you learn from talking to other players? And her, it's a long answer, but I'm only going to read you the first two words. Do you learn from talking to other players? Absolutely not, was her answer. She goes to the professionals. She goes to the people who, in conjunction with each other, reduce the chance of getting taken. The more money you have, the more important it is that you have a team. Now, people who are not acting in other people's best interest, for the most part, are a small minority of people. And what I'm talking about is criminals. But if you really want to make sure that nobody that's working for you falls into that category, if you've got an attorney, an accountant, an insurance agent, an investment advisor, possibly a tax specialist beyond the CPA, or a team, and all of them are coordinating their activities and all of them know what the other professionals are doing, it gets real hard. It gets real hard for anything to happen with your money. Now, that column was from MarketWatch. We're going to take another Paul Needs a Cup of Espresso break. And when we come back, another column from MarketWatch about the rest of us when it comes to retirement. You know, I talk to people a lot about what it's like to live in retirement, what you need to do with your money in retirement, what you need to do in planning your retirement. And sometimes I meet people who say, you know, I'm very lucky. I've done really well. I don't have huge needs. I've got more than I need. But, you know, there are a lot more people out there. And this may make some of you feel a little better, but it doesn't mean we don't all need to step up a little bit. Retirement changed significantly about 30 years ago when companies that used to offer traditional pensions, back when you took one job when you graduated from high school or college and you worked at that company until you got the proverbial gold watch, you know, now it's not like that. And in the late 70s, early 80s, companies began switching from a traditional pension where you get a check at retirement for the rest of your life to a self-directed 401k. And self-directed meaning you decide what is going to go in that account. You decide how much to contribute and decide how to invest it. And, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily feel comfortable or know how to do that. And companies and investment advisors and financial planners are beginning to offer services, some of which I think are overpriced, to people to help them allocate their 401k, to help them understand how they should invest it, and to help them actually stay in the strategy. The biggest problem with knowing the balance in your 401k and managing yourself is the temptation to borrow from that 401k, or when you change jobs, just to cash it out, pay the taxes, and spend it. And down the road, that's not a good thing to do. So an analysis by the Federal Reserve's 2013 Survey of Consumer Finances discovered, here we're 30 years down the road with 401ks, the median working age couple, so we're talking about people that are still working, and they're not retired, and evidently will have some difficulty probably retiring. And, you know, I'm building up this point, so take a second, and I'll tell you what I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you the amount that the median working age couple has saved for retirement. Let's do multiple choice for fun. I'll never know if you got this right or not. We'll start low. A, $5,000. B, $25,000. C, $67,313. D, $1 million. And the answer is A, $5,000. $5,000 is the average balance of a retirement savings account. So, needless to say, that's sort of a disaster. 70% of couples, when we leave the median, there's only 30% who have above $50,000 saved, and that's going all the way up to the higher age group. This was median age, by the way, for retirement, as well as median balance. So you're looking at 40, 45 for that balance. The real problem is the average for people in their late 50s and early 60s who are within 5 years of retirement have an average balance of $17,000. It's just you become completely dependent on Social Security. We've talked before about the large percentage of Americans, 75%, who are either totally dependent or partially dependent on Social Security. But you know, as much as you need to know about money and issues like that, it's a lot more fun to talk about life, because life is what's important. That was a rapid segue, because I understand Myron Campbell will be joining us shortly after a very brief break. Hi, this is Paul Puckin. Welcome back. Happy to introduce you to Myron Campbell, who is joining us on the show. Myron is an author, TV film producer, speaker, and he then claims the word techie. I may have to talk to him about my computers after this interview. He's an author, a motion picture producer, and he's writing a series of children books for ages 5 to 10. He's trying to teach diversity, good morals, and education in his books, and he's bringing to life the characters that many of us can relate to. And baseball, which is in the first book, is certainly something all of us can relate to. Myron, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
I got to tell you, when I first saw the book come out, I thought, what does this guy not do? We met a few years ago. You were working on TV and film production, several different companies you've been affiliated with and still are, Full Camp Productions. You had a magazine called Differences Magazine. I know you're a dedicated father. How do you find time to do all these things you're working on?
I don't do it by myself. I mean, I have a great rock at home, that being my wife, 14 plus years this year. So she makes everything possible for me to be able to rip and run around and do what I need to do when it comes to trying to build these companies and these brands and these different products and projects that I'm currently working on.
You're still working on the film production, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, actually, it actually everything is now transferred over to my new company, TC3 Media Group. So in addition to still producing television and film original content, we also have the literary publishing side, you know, with this book being the first book that we're publishing and putting out as well, with hopes to in the future to take what I'm doing with the children's books and turn into a animated series.
Oh, no, that would be awesome. Now, the listeners haven't heard anything about you other than, hey, Myron Campbell's going to be on the show, and he wrote The Adventures of Melvin Walker. Tell us about the book itself and what made you. I've written books myself. You know, it takes right. some time. Tell us about the backstory.
Well, basically, these were stories that I told my children at bedtime when I would go into the room and tuck them in. At night, I would stay in there for an extra 10, 15 minutes, and we would just start a story, and every night we would pick up where we left off, and it just turned into what it is today. You know, one night my wife was like, you know, and I have to say, like, a whole year had went by of us telling just crazy stories back and forth. I would give them something, they would give it back to me and say, no, change it up this way, Daddy, do it like this, and so one night my wife was like, you know, you really need to put on your recorder on your phone and just record what you're saying. So with that being said, that actually turned into probably the first 3 to 4 pages of the current book, Melvin Goes to the Ballpark. It just, you know, the whole backstory, you know, it's an inner city kid, you know, it's loosely based off myself and my children and things that they went through or going through, and same here. So that's pretty much where it came from. You know, it's everything's loosely based off of what happened in my life for my boy's life.
And the book itself is not so much about baseball. I know it's available on Kindle because you had put out on Facebook and LinkedIn where you could get the book. And what strikes me is you're using things that we're all familiar with or that we remember from when we were kids. So that kids today, who really aren't that much different, I mean, they're in a different world with technology and, you know, everything's changed in some ways, but kids are kids. And it seems to me, the age group this is targeted to, I think somebody probably second or third grade could read some of this. What's the book actually targeted to?
It's targeting, I would say, third to fifth graders, which is your you know, five, six, seven, 8 to 19 year olds. You know, I had the privilege of reading at my son's school back in May. The first week of May is Children's Book Week. It's like a national big thing. And I had the privilege of reading from K through fifth grade for that entire week. And, you know, the response was, it was crazy. You know, that week allowed me to perfect my pitch, to be honest with you, my presentation to the children. But, you know, I saw how at the end of me reading the book, I saw how the questions and the things that they were relating to changed as the group got older. So, you know, your K through first graders were more concerned with, you know, why is he wearing that color shirt, or why is he wearing his hat backwards, this, that, and the third. And then as you started getting into second and third and fourth grade, by the time I got the fifth graders, you know, the questions were intellectual kind of like level type questions, like, you know, was this, did you write these books? Was it because of something that you went through personally? And was it because of your children? You know, what's the background? These are fifth graders asking me this question, and it kind of blew me away. But it was great because I saw everybody's face light up as I was reading this book too. And you have to realize, you know, this is not your traditional picture book where you got a picture in one or two sentences. You may go 3 or 4 pages without a picture. You know, I'm about substance and giving the reader something. I want them to walk away with something when they're leaving here. I want them to use their imagination and their creativity to get the juices flowing and so they can see what it is I'm describing in the book. So, but as you mentioned, it's definitely something, you know, this is a platform, you know, doing research in children's books. And mind you, I'm used to reading scripts. I'm used to reading a 97 plus page script in one sitting and seeing everything that I'm reading And, you know, but doing research with children and literacy and the numbers are crazy. You know, it's saying 2/3 of people by the time the kids finish fourth grade, they won't know how to read either on their level or even above their level. And, you know, they only have like a 78% chance of even getting a chance to learn how to read past the fourth or fifth grade level. And they said that the majority of them, if they don't get past that level, they'll end up in jail or on welfare. And that was some staggering numbers to me. And, you know, my children, you know, my oldest son, he's a rising fifth grade, and my youngest son is a rising third grade. And I got a daughter who just finished her first year of college. And, you know, even when she was small and to them now, they all read on the next level, if not a little bit above. And it all starts with the school and, you know, like the school they went to, or both of them, all three of them, actually, they talked about 20 minutes a day. How 20 minutes a day can change a child's development of their reading level and just their understanding of a language and so forth and so on. So, and that's how it is in my house. You know, my kids read just about every night, and they're getting geared up for the summertime, and they picked up their summer books from the school, which I like. They give them a number of books to read over the summer. And that's what it's about, man. Just trying to expand their vocabulary and let them explore the world through books.
Well, you know, and if you think about it, reading, I mean, I don't know about you. I still do. I read a lot, particularly when I was younger, you know, didn't have a job. But even now I read a lot in a lot of different areas. And I read a lot of fiction personally, but occasionally I'll read some nonfiction. But if you think about just basic skills, you've got to be able to read. I mean, you and I are guys. You've got the two sons. Only your daughter would actually read directions. But, you know, it's good for you and I to know how to read directions, and your boys as well. I'm joking. Right. But you know, I mean, reading is such a primary skill. It, you're mainly doing this currently, I think, in the local area in Virginia Beach. Is this something you see as expanding to, or are you already participating with an organization that does this nationally?
I'm starting local. My goal was to start local and then, you know, let the big boys come after you. But it's starting to catch fire, man. It started with the local Virginia Beach school system, and now it's expanding to other organizations. A couple organizations that I'm working with locally is one's called REACH, and they're out of Norfolk, Virginia, and it stands for Reading Enriches All Children. And what they do is they have a literacy program where they read to homeless and at-risk kids that live in shelters. So there's about 10 or 15 shelters that they deal with in the Hampton Roads, Virginia area, and I'll be reading at those shelters. And at the end of the reading session, they'll be able to get a book, pick two books each, whether it be mine or other books that were donated to the organization, which I think is awesome. Because a lot of these places, they don't have books that are geared to the children that live in these places, you know. So for them to get a book, you know, that's awesome. And then I'm working with another organization called 4Kids. They also work with at-risk youth in the area also. And just past week, I actually teaming up with the United Way of Southampton Roads. So I'll be working with them, and they work primarily with Norfolk City Public Schools. So I finally get to get into that Norfolk elementary school market through the United Way. They're excited about working with me. I'm excited about working with them. But I am looking to expand it on a regional and national level. I'll be reading at the Boys and Girls Clubs. I'm starting a whole youth reading initiative around my books, and I'll be doing children's festivals. I just got contacted by Charlotte, the Charlotte Children's Festival that's coming up in October, October 1st to be exact. So they're reviewing my content to see if it fits their criteria. And I'm looking to, you know, just make my way and spread it out maybe on a tri-state area and then start going out and going out. But I've been contacted from people in New York that I have connections in Baltimore and Florida and in other places, Atlanta. So I'm real excited, man. I'm just going to take it one step at a time. It's not easy because, you know, I still got to take the time out to write the next book. I started on the next one. And, you know, so, yeah, I would love to get it to spread out and work with any organization or any individuals or businesses that want to support the book and in their area, support it by, you know, donating a couple copies, you know, to some of their local organizations as well. I think that'd be great. And that's how I've been doing it here locally, working with local businesses to support the book.
Super. Let's take a brief break, and when we're back, we'll wrap up the interview with Myron Campbell. Hope you're enjoying hearing about the adventures of Melvin Walker and the first book in that series. Myron Campbell talking to us about his first book in a series to help kids get back into reading, one of the main skills that kids need. You know, Myron, it struck me as an author, one of the first questions you were answering about going out into the schools and noticing the differences between kindergarten and first grade. And then by fifth grade, they're asking you pretty sophisticated questions that go way beyond the book to, hey, did you have a personal experience? Why did you write it? Do you know what a huge advantage that is for an author to actually see your audience?
Well, absolutely. I do. And it allowed me to, A, know what I did this first go around. I did write. You know, I was nervous. I'm not going to lie to you. I've never written a book before. I never even saw myself as an author. I just saw myself as dad who told crazy stories at night. But it allowed me to know how to lay out future books and also see what works, what doesn't work. And you know, it's almost like, you know, you get that that test market right out the gate. And so, you know, working on the next book, it just allows me to prepare a little bit better, maybe do a little bit more research on certain topics that I want to touch on, you know, because every book, you know, a child and a parent, you know, that, you know, I'm teaching them some type of a lesson, some type of valuable lesson will be learned in each book. You know, and, you know, with the next book, and I mentioned the next book on the back of the first one, you know, it's the Adventures of Melvin Walker book series, but the next one is going to be Melvin Learns How to Swim. So they're going to be talking about, you know, swimming safety. And, you know, growing up in the inner city, I didn't know how to swim. I have to be honest with you. You know, we had, you know, sprinklers or fire hydrants or stuff like that. So I didn't learn how to swim until I moved to South Carolina, where my mom is from. And then I had to learn how to swim. Everybody either had a pool or we went to the lake or whatever the case may be. So I learned how to swim there. But there's a lot of safety that goes into it. So this particular next story, Melvin mom, she finally finds a camp for him to go to. But she would feel a lot safer if he knew how to swim. Right. So they seek out in that local area, that urban area, you know, a place where he can learn how to swim. So I'm excited about the next one. And that's true to form. With it goes right along with my sons. They had to learn how to swim. You know, we went to the rec center and they took lessons. And now they're I'm not saying they're Greg Louganis, but they are a lot better than the way they were a year ago.
You know, it occurred to me that one of your children's first book may be My Dad Who Tells Crazy Stories at Night. you know, you never know. Now, you grew up in the inner city, but that wasn't the Norfolk, Virginia area, right?
No. I grew up in New York. I'm originally from Queens, New York. You know, Mets fan all day since '84, and I grew up there. And my mom is originally from South Carolina, so she moved to New York when she was 18, and. But growing up in Queens, you know, I was able, you know, to do certain things, experience certain things. But it wasn't until I moved to South Carolina that I got, A, exposed to baseball. All my cousins and family down there, they were, you know, athletes, whether it be basketball, football. Baseball was the one that stuck out to me. And my family, you know, we are baseball fanatics. You know, we understand the game. My boys have been playing the game since they were four, and they understand it. It's not like they're just out there doing it to do it. They understand it. You know, we don't force anything on them. The minute they say they don't want to play anymore, then that's what it is, you know. Right. But they definitely understand the game, and it's just funny to me how they really, really understand the game. Like, they know if it's first and second and one out, you know, where's the ball going? What's going on? What's your role? How do you do, you know, they just understand it. They get it, and they love it. So, but yeah, it was South Carolina opened my eyes up to a lot of different things. And I tell people all the time, you know, I had the best of both worlds. You know, I lived in New York with the city, but I also lived in the South where, you know, I had some buddies that didn't have plumbing, didn't have running water.
Right.
Went out
well,
back. the bathroom. So I know what it is, man. I understand it. I get it.
Well, I grew up in the same place, but I'm very familiar with South Carolina. Almost my entire mom's side of the family is South Carolina, all over the state.
Yeah.
And so you had the big city, and then you ended up in pretty darn close to the opposite of the big city, and probably discovered something called grits and collard greens and all those things that my family, you know, when I was a kid, I couldn't stand those foods. And now I'll often stop in Walterboro or somewhere along I-95 if I'm coming through, just because I know I can get really good Southern food.
Exactly.
There on the road. You know, it's interesting. You started with baseball, you're moving to swimming, and as I was talking about the food you had growing up in Queens compared to South Carolina, is there going to be a Melvin Has Dinner book, or how to get your kids to eat, or how to give them a book that maybe makes them want to eat certain food?
Man, I'm still trying to figure that out with my oldest. My youngest, he's my solid thick guy. You know, he'll eat anything. My oldest is picky. We call him Bones. And I'm telling you, man, I think the only fruit this kid will eat is a banana. I can't get him to eat any other vegetables or anything like that. So, yeah, that sounds like a great title. Melvin finally eats veggies and fruits. I don't know, but
or you can incorporate that into any of the books, because to be an athlete, you've got to have nutrition.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it unfortunately, despite Woody Allen's, what was that movie, Sleeper, where they made the comment, if only we'd known a Coca-Cola and two Twinkies a day and you're immortal. You know, it doesn't actually work that way.
Right.
And, you know, I think it's exciting what you're doing with all this. And I'm going to be interested in seeing how the series goes. I think going out and reading in the schools and actually getting in front of your audience and seeing their faces as you read and knowing what connects and what doesn't connect as well, so you can, you know, emphasize the things that they respond to, is just brilliant. I wish you the best of luck on it. Now, somebody listening to this show, probably everybody, has kids or grandkids.
Absolutely.
What's the best way for them to find out more about the adventures of Melvin Walker?
The first place anyone can go to is going to be the book website. It's melvinbookseries.com. So just melvinbookseries.com, just all one word. You can purchase the book there. You could get it on every platform. I mean, it's available on Amazon for print, Amazon Kindle, iBooks for your iPad, Nook e-reader for, you know, Barnes & Noble. So it's available everywhere. So melvinbookseries.com. I can be contacted through that site as well. You know, just go to contact and, you know, read my bio, contact me, shoot me an email, a message. But also all my social media is the same. So you can reach me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, as well as LinkedIn at Myron, M-Y-R-O-N, the letter C, and then media. Myron C Media. So all my social media is completely the same. And also like the Adventures of Melvin Walker Facebook page. I'm trying to get the likes up. If you have a child out there, one thing I started is called the Adventure Kids. So I'm looking to add more kids to the Adventure Kids. Right now I have about 4 or 5 members right now, looking to expand that. And if you get the book, just take a picture of the book with your child, holding the book, send the picture to me through any of those platforms, and we'll add them to the Adventure Kids, and I will have special things for the Adventure Kids later on in the year towards the holiday season.
Well, and I'll put the links up to the book and your social media on the gettingthere.life page for the archives of the show. Those will be up by Friday. And for those of you, while Myron was describing where to get contacted, you heard a sound that you may have thought was something it wasn't, involving plumbing. And having lived in Virginia Beach for 27 years, it didn't take me a millisecond to recognize it, and I had to chuckle because I haven't heard it here in Florida hardly at all. And that's the sound of an F-18 Hornet heading over to Oceana Naval Air Station.
That is correct.
after whatever it was doing. And when you live anywhere, Norfolk, Portsmouth, Chesapeake, Suffolk, Virginia Beach, you're going to hear the sound of freedom on a regular basis. And those F-18 Hornets, I know when they go over Lynn Haven Mall, That is a memorable sound.
Absolutely. And they're out here doing their exercises. You know how they do.
Exactly. Well, listen, best of luck in your future successes. I think it's an awesome thing you're doing. And if you're listening to the show and you'd like more information, those links will be on the website shortly. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
You know, I really enjoyed the conversation with Myron Campbell. I think what he's doing in the school systems is, there's two things there. First of all, what he's doing is really a good thing. You know, one of the things I wrote about in Investophobia for people who have developed a fear of losing their money or being taken, or they've gotten disconnected because their focus is on their money and not their life, is to get out and do things that help other people. I should have asked Myron before I let him go how rewarding he finds that, but I think you know anyway. You could hear it in the sound of his voice when he said how the kids would light up when he would read to them. You know, getting out and volunteering in the schools, there are all sorts of ways you can get involved in your community. And for those of you who feel like, you know, hey, Paul, you know, I'm just not an altruist. I don't feel like going out and doing that stuff. What do I get out of it? Well, here's the thing. You get more than you give. Boy, that makes me want to play Zac Brown's Something's Gotta Give album. Oh, well, not this show. But you get more than you give when you get out and you help other people. So I think what Myron is doing is a great thing. Now, I learn things from everybody I interview on the show and from reading and all sorts of other things, but I also learn things from researching the music I want to play on the show. And, you know, as I told you, I know what baseball is. I know the difference between a baseball bat and a hockey stick. I actually know more about baseball than hockey. But I don't really know that much baseball music. Well, there's a whole album called The Baseball Project. Here's a song from that album.
On fire. and we cheered for them all. We cheered for them all, 'cause they played baseball.
And that was the Baseball Project. They played baseball. Now, as little as I know about baseball, baseball is much more fun to talk about than money. But let's drift back a little bit and get back a little bit on the money topic. Why? Well, because money is a critical tool when it comes to what you can and can't do in retirement, or for that matter, while you're working. We've talked a lot, every show that I've brought up the money topic on, about the risk in the bond market. Howard Gold wrote a column, "Now is the time to get out of the bond market." I've been saying that for a while. Nobody knows when everything is going to happen, but you're not getting paid very much, and the chase, investors chasing for yield, that chase almost always leads to bad things happening with money. The bond market is going to be affected by any increase in interest rates. You've also got European issues. You've probably heard of Brexit, B-R-E-X-I-T, which relates to Britain making a decision on whether to stick with the euro or to go back to their own sovereign currency. There's a little more to it than that, but I don't feel like giving you a headache. The bottom line is, there are a lot of big things happening around the world. Global yields are low. U.S. yields are low. You're not getting paid for the risk you're taking by being in bonds. And so I didn't want to let this moment pass to not warn those of you who are still in bond funds. That's just not a good place to be for a multitude of reasons. First, you're not getting much for being in them in the first place. Second, the risk of loss whenever rates go up just 1 point is higher than the interest rate you're currently receiving. Third, there's just better places to put your money. So I hope for those of you I'm tempted to get bumper stickers for everybody that say friends don't let their friends invest in bond funds, because it has just become a very, very dangerous place to be. Let's take the last 5 minutes of the show, do a little wrap up on overall the things that you might want to be looking at. We'll start with the money part. There'll be links to the articles, both I think were from MarketWatch, about Amelia Roll and the role she plays in helping her son, an NFL star, understand how to handle their finances. It's a great article. You do not need to be a multi-million dollar high tax bracket income producing person to benefit from some of the real common sense insights she shares. I wouldn't be surprised if she didn't get a job offer from somebody, not that she'd necessarily want it, because she really is very good at showing the basic things that people need to think about when they choose advisors, how they choose those advisors, and then what they actually invest in. Then we talked about the current state of American workers planning for retirement and how low the balances are in their 401k plans. Now, there's many reasons for that that the article goes into that are relevant. One of the big ones is it's just a lot more expensive to live today than it was for our parents. And I'm not just talking about inflation. I'm talking about we have things that didn't exist when, even when we were kids for most of us, and those things cost money. Your parents did not pay for cable. They did not pay for Wi-Fi. They did not pay for internet. Okay, they might have in their later years, but I'm talking 40 years ago. These were not normal expenses. Cars, education, healthcare. Their pricing has inflated dramatically over the years. So when I talk about this, I'm not trying to beat you up. If you're out there saying, Paul, what do you want me to do? I can barely get my bills paid. You want me to save for retirement? Obviously, you have to live. But make a long-term plan. Try to live on less than you earn. It's very challenging and difficult to do, but I highly recommend it. And then we closed a little bit. After the interview with Myron Campbell, we talked a little bit about the bond market and how, I know you may be tired of me saying it, but there are still trillions of dollars in bond funds. Somebody's still investing in them. I hope it's not you. Now, back to the Myron Campbell interview. Links to his book website and his website will be on gettingthere.life by Friday. And I hope you'll take an opportunity to not only look at what he's doing to help our youth learn a basic skill called reading and get them excited about it, but I think you'll also look at the time, would also like you to look, I mean, at the time that you have where maybe the most rewarding thing you could do for yourself is do some volunteer work in a school or with a local charity. Get involved in your community. It means a lot to a lot of people when they see someone who doesn't have to be there interested in helping them. It's been a pleasure, as always, to join you here on what I call the conversation at Getting There. I look forward to talking with you all next week, and I would recommend you ignore some of the hysteria that will probably be coming out in the media over Brexit, the changes that may occur in Europe that I mentioned. And just try to have a good week. Focus on some good news. There is good news out there here and there. Get outside, get into nature, and have fun. Take a bike ride. Do something that's enjoyable and fun. I'll probably try to lose a golf ball at some point, but since I enjoy doing that, we'll call it fun, even though I'm not that good. I look forward to talking with you next week.